on the phone now, though. I've been excited about this since he agreed to do this last night. I hit him up last minute saying, hey, man, I've got to get you on to talk about the NFL draft. Friend of the program, he's been in studio numerous times with us, Brent Rollins of Pro Football Focus. Now, Ross, I didn't warn you about this, but you are now the second smartest person in this conversation. That's a line Dave uses all the time. Brent, thanks for joining us this morning. How are you? And if you don't mind, give us like the dollar menu version of your resume and credentials, because I want to make sure I'm saying it right. I don't want to discount anything.
Good morning. Doing good morning. Well. But in terms of resume,
Yeah, where do you start?
Right? I do work for Pro Football Focus. I guess I'm a professor by day, so that college professor by day.
Yeah,
so
where do you teach, by the way? What do you teach?
I teach at a pharmacy school in Gwinnett County. It's called PCOM. I teach drug marketing and business of pharmacy and healthcare and all that sort of stuff.
Good stuff.
On a daily basis. But all this, all the Pro Football Focus stuff, this will be my fifth year with PFF. Do a lot of data collection, special teams analysis, and writing for the website.
Good stuff. Yeah, it's fascinating talking to you. I always love having you in studio to break down things analytically, and I value your opinions more than a lot of people because you can back it up with numbers. But that being said, we'll just dive on into this. I know you got a busy morning ahead of you. The first thing I want to ask you about the Falcons taking the with the number 14 pick, Chris Lindstrom. I know that you tweeted out last night that I think you said he was, what, the 51st overall pick, is according to Pro Football Focus. Am I saying that right? And if so, correct me, but how do you value the Falcons using that 14th pick for Chris Lindstrom?
Well, the key word that you use there is value. And the way we set up our board is a lot different than you see a lot of other draft boards set up, because we also factor in positional value. For example, you see someone like Byron Murphy, Greedy Williams, DeAndre Baker, for example, being a lot higher on our board than maybe other boards because of the importance of coverage. So Lindstrom being lower, it's more so about a positional value thing than it is value of the player. He still was the highest, our number one guard.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, from a positional value standpoint and where you're picking, maybe not necessarily the best match.
Looking at the top of the draft, no surprises early on with Kyler Murray going number one to Arizona, whether they needed a quarterback or not. Nick Bosa going number two, Quinnen Williams. Are there anything at the top that maybe stands out to you as maybe a head scratcher, or was this a pretty scratch opening to the round draft according to Pro Football Focus?
No, it was a very interesting. The first three picks were pretty well set.
Right.
Feel good about that, but once Oakland took, Farrell at four,
Cleveland Farrell, right?
That's how you want to pronounce his name now. But
sure.
That one, that early, where you had a lot of we had some other edge defenders like Josh Allen from Kentucky, rated a little higher, but he's still a sort of first round talent, but maybe not necessarily that high. And then of course when the Giants took Daniel Jones at six, he was the 70th ranked player on our board. And when you think about how valuable quarterbacks are, and that we would, thus elevate the value of quarterbacks on our board, that he was 70th and then taken sixth, that was a massive mismatch.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
One of our analysts even wrote an article about him being like a more of a third round type guy. So that was definitely the whoa.
So there's a reason Giants fans were staring at their TVs thinking, like, what on earth are we doing? But looking at Dwayne Haskins at number 15, how did those two compare? And that'll be the gauge that Giants fans probably will use for the next several years, is what will Dwayne Haskins accomplish at Washington, because he was on the board when we took Daniel Jones. How do those two match up in terms of what you guys look at?
Well, I'd be a fan of those two teams because, that is, in one draft, two teams that are in the same division. That's like if Breeze and Ryan were, 2 and 3, and one had picked the other, that sort of thing. But Haskins, we had, I think the 10th overall player on our board, and his from a clean pocket, which one of the things that we track is, clean pocket, under pressure, all the various sort of avenues with quarterbacks throw. he was the number two, had the number two passer rating amongst from a clean pocket. And the biggest thing with that is that that specific measure is much more stable year over year and translates from college to the NFL more so than a lot of other measures. Like throwing under pressure is a sort of flip of a coin. It varies from year to year. It's not as stable as a metric as throwing from a clean pocket, and he's really good at that.
Speaking with Brent Rollins of Pro Football Focus on very short notice this morning.
Brent, looking at maybe the biggest steal and the biggest reach in the draft, statistically, what do you think that would be?
Biggest reach? We've already talked about Jones at QB is the biggest reach. However, when you think about the positional value of the quarterback, because in terms of what translates to winning, if you get it right, if you get above average quarterback play from that pick, the later on value, but from a just where he was sort of ranked versus where he was drafted, is very much one. Personally, for me, one that I think Josh Allen falling to 7 with Jacksonville is very much a. I bet Jacksonville wasn't in any way thinking he would be there. That was one for me that would be sort of steal. And also, I think locally, I think DeAndre Baker at 30 is a steal. And a lot of folks, you see a lot of boards that don't necessarily have him, have him in that range. But if you draft corner, if you draft coverage players and they turn out to hit, it's very game-changing from a win-loss perspective and impact on your defense.
Well, I'm glad you brought up DeAndre Baker. I was certainly going to put that angle on this, being that we're in Athens, Georgia. Big Georgia homers, by the way. But the Giants did trade a second-round pick, a fifth-round pick. Is that all they did? And a fourth-round pick. So they gave up pretty much almost their entire rest of their draft to get back in there for DeAndre Baker. Now, you call him a steal, but is he that much of a steal at 30?
He was the 16th overall player on our board, and I keep hitting this point home, but it's the value of coverage cannot be understated. It's sort of when you look at positional value in the NFL, specifically in the NFL, it's not as much as a magnitude as college, or it's a much greater magnitude than college. But in the NFL, it's quarterback and then it's cornerback. Like those two positions are sort of one and two in terms of importance because of the way the coverage affects the game. Because the game in and of itself is all about the pass game.
So I know there's a lot.
He's going to be great.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of rumors going around there as to why he slid off some mock drafts. But like you said, a lot of cornerbacks, when they have little statistics, which I think DeAndre Baker may not have the numbers to pop out because they just flat out weren't throwing the ball his direction. How do you guys assess that when it comes to a cornerback? Because there are so little throws his way, but you have a small sample size of analytics to go on. What kind of challenges does that give you guys when you're grading players like DeAndre Baker?
It is. It's very much a challenge, obviously, but it's something that each and every year we evaluate in the offseason, we get better at. But when you look at just from a sheer the numbers that you can quantify, he allowed just 10 first downs. He didn't allow any touchdowns in 2 years, for that matter. He was fourth overall in terms of coverage grade, like when passes were thrown into his coverage, eighth lowest passer rating in the class. I think in terms of yards after the catch, it was almost in the borderline 1 yard average after the catch. And in essence, if someone caught the ball, he was right there making the tackle. So what metrics we can define that when things go his way, it's lights out, and it has been for two years.
Is Drew Lock your number one quarterback available on the board, or do you have another guy that's ranked ahead of him?
It's interesting that you say that, because Lock is not the next quarterback that we have listed. It's Will Greer. Like in our mock, Greer was in the 20s. And possibly even in sort of the back end of the first round. But Greer is, I think, 24th on our overall board. Locked down into the sort of late 30s, around, I think, 37 he was. But and the thing, the reason being is just the sort of the way we look at metrics and what translates into value in the NFL, and the ability to throw from a clean pocket, the ability to sort of what we term NFL throws. You know, Greer actually led the nation in what we call big time throws, which are sort of, you know, dropping something 30 yards down the field into, you know, small, very small window kind of type throws. He's the next quarterback on our board.
All I can say is thank goodness he didn't finish his career at Florida, because I'm glad he went up to the went over to West Virginia. Speaking of Drew Locke, though, he's somebody that impressed me a lot in college. I know he didn't always have the best team around him at Missouri, but he just seems to me like just a, I don't know, just a stereotypical NFL-style quarterback. Do you think that he, I know he rates lower than Will Greer, but what is just sort of your prediction? Because I do value your predictions when it comes to this kind of stuff. How would you see Drew Locke translating if he does get a good NFL team around him?
The interesting thing with him is consistency. Is you'll see in his grade for his own career, because, you know, one of the things about Drew Locke that, you know, we have 4 years worth of data on him. I mean, he played as many snaps as almost anyone in the country if you total the last 4 years at that position. And his grade progressively got better each and every year. But, you know, it's a very much, you know, when you say, hey, can he make all the throws? He's definitively that. He has the arm strength to do those things, and you'll see throws occasionally where it's just like, okay, wow, that's something. But it's the consistency. I think one of our guys even compared him to Jay Cutler.
Okay.
So, you know, that level of one throw is absolute jaw-dropping, and the next three, not so much.
It sounds like you just described my golf game, by the way. I'll hit a drive 300 yards, and I'll just, like, shank one into the woods the next hit, then I'll chip over the green after that. So it's just not a model of consistency. It's funny you brought that up. But a couple more things before I let you go, and you got a busy morning ahead of you. The Falcons traded back into the back end of the first round. They gave up essentially their picks today. They gave their second and third pick away to draft Caleb McGarry, a big-bodied right tackle out of Washington. Is there anything you can tell us about him and what kind of value you put that the Falcons got out of that trade?
It's one of the sort of big things for me with Dimitroff that he's always gone up. He's always he's never not one to sit pat, trade back, or anything, or to trade back. And, you know, a lot of times you never know. You never know the conversations that are happening because, if, you know, you need somebody to partner with you as much if you want to move back. But McGarry was, I think, our 60-something overall player, 10th-rated tackle. There we had a lot, you know, 3-4 tackles that were sort of graded above him. But I think when you see the two picks in combination, you see a defined philosophy from the Falcons.
Right.
You know, much like I think it was, I want to, maybe five years ago when they went and did, or 6 years ago when they went and did Trufant and Alford back to back in round one and two. It's like, hey, we are defining that this is, you know, where we're going to put our resources this year. And you saw they signed two players in the offseason that were a lot, you know, very much from the Sam Pittman school of offensive line. A lot bigger fellas.
Yeah, man.
And you know, with Listrom and McGarry, McGarry's 6'3", 310 plus, or sorry, 6'7", 310 plus, they're drafting, you know, ginormous individuals who are also rated highly. Like, if you look at Lindstrom and McGarry's from the athletic standpoint, you know, the drills and all the combine-type measurements, very much on the higher end of the athletic scale. But, you know, one of the things from the Falcons' perspective that I could see the conversation, or you might hear Dimitroff being, or Dan Quinn being interviewed today, and then saying, well, we feel like we really have 5 first and second round picks this year. And because you've got Deion Jones, Keanu Neal, and Ricardo Allen coming back from injury. So, you know, I think that could be a spin. But in terms of, you know, with the draft in and of itself, the draft, you know, over forever, in essence, there's one constant, and that's pick more people. But the way to get better players is to make more picks, because, you know, no one person is greater at it than any other. It's a total crapshoot in a way for certain things, certain positions specifically. But when you don't use that draft capital in that way and sort of give yourself more chances to hit, it makes the spotlight on the picks that you do make much, much greater.
Great way to look at it. We'll let you go on this, Brandon. I know you got a busy day ahead of you, but just any predictions, anything you're watching for as the second and third round takes place today? What should fans be looking for according to Pro Football Focus?
It's always interesting to see where quarterbacks go. I think probably the most interesting story is does a draft pick get traded for Rosen? Does that happen? Especially at the top of the second round, because now that, you know, hey, Arizona knows, and now all these teams know that Arizona is going to be one of dealing. Can we get this guy or for a early second, mid second, something like that? Outside of that, I think locally, specifically, I'm very interested to see where Riley Ridley and Mecole Hardman ended up as possibilities today. I actually ran into Mecole at the airport in Philly.
Yeah.
I walked up to get on the plane, and he was sitting right beside me, and we had a good conversation. But I tend to think that he thinks that today's going to be a really good day for himself.
Cool.
It's going to be interesting to see. From the Falcons over the weekend, one of the things to watch just from a depth perspective is I think now they need to really transition into anything and everything, coverage and or edge defenders to get after the pass rusher. Now that they've clearly defined what they want to do with the first two picks. And I think Nauta is a sort of, they got two six-rounders right now, in which, I could also see, the Falcons have seven picks remaining. I could see Dimitroff still wanting to get maybe into that middle part of the third round if somebody's falling that they definitively covet. But if they keep those picks, two in the sixth round, I think you could see, I would like to see Isaac Nauta be sort of in the conversation in that territory.
That would make a ton of Georgia fans happy around here, myself included. Brent, thank you first for answering my text late night last night, and thank you also for agreeing to come on here. And I know you know this. We're excited for your semester to be over so you can spend more time in studio. Always a great time when you're on the show.
Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon, Brent. Thanks again. That is Brent.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you. Brent Rollins of Pro Football Focus.